batter at his very best. We saw in Shanghai those reflexes that are incredible, like a mongoose on amphetamine.
Murray wins it all. He's champion of the Barclays ATP World Tour Finals.
Has done it. Joe Konta. It is confirmed. Joe Konta with the biggest title of her career at the Miami Open and now also at a new career high.
You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious. That ball was on the line. Shock flew up.
This is URN Sport.
Hello and welcome to the fourth episode of Strawberries and Cream. I'm Matt, I'm joined here by Ollie Murray Hill. Gentlemen, nice to see you again. It's been a little bit since
our last podcast.
Yeah, it has been a little bit since our last podcast. But anyway, we're going to be talking about Wimbledon now. Last episode, obviously, we did a French Open roundup. If you didn't listen to that, please do tune in. But we're going to be previewing arguably the biggest Grand Slam of the year, which is at the All England Club in Wimbledon. And we're going to start off by looking at the men's side of the draw. So, obviously, Roger Federer, last couple of years, a clear resurgence in form, winning Wimbledon again. You know, is he just quite simply the clear favourite for the tournament, Ollie?
He has to be. I think you'd be a fool to bet against him in the same way you would have been a fool to bet against Nadal winning the French Open. I mean, he's had a rest. I think it was a good decision for him to not play in the French Open, and he's gonna come back fit. He's gonna come back ready. I don't know how many tournaments he's gonna play prior. He's not playing Queens, is he?
No, he's playing in Stuttgart, which is at the time of this going to at the time I was recording this, the conclusion of the tournament has not yet been determined. But with that, I know he won his first match against Alexander Zverev's brother Misha Zverev in a three set encounter. So I think he's just building some form there. So obviously that lends our preview perhaps not the insight we could have had, but I think we can judge it off some previous years and his grass court form. So he's obviously had quite a bit of a rest. Rahul, you know, he took the clay court season off. Do you think that gives him a bit of an edge going into the grass court season, especially at his age?
I mean, we discussed this in the last two podcasts. I mean, it definitely does, especially with his age and especially with fatigue nowadays with tennis being such a demanding sport. I think it really helps him in terms of being able to freshen up, to make sure his mind's on the right game, and it will definitely help him against other competitors, even those who are younger and able to take the demands of the game.
Yeah, it definitely is an interesting one to do. Obviously, on that note, we talk about Federer, and I think the man that goes with Federer really in the same thought is Rafael Nadal. You know, he has withdrawn from Queens in order to give himself sufficient rest for the tournament. Do you think that's important at his age? You know, he's obviously, we've mentioned him in previous podcasts about his injury issues. You know, he's getting on a little bit. He's getting on a bit. He's 32, which is getting on a bit for a professional sportsman. Do you think that shows that, you know, he is getting towards the tail end of his career if he's having to rest for these sort of tournaments?
I don't think it necessarily suggests that he's near the end of the career. I just think it's a very, very smart decision in terms of his body. Like you've touched upon, he is quite injury prone, and we've seen the likes of Federer, who's got a body of steel, doing the same thing with the likes of the French Open. I mean, nowadays tennis players are going to really, really struggle with the intensity of the game to play all year round. I think we've had a discussion before about whether the tennis schedule was a bit too hectic. I mean, there's not really any let-off for a lot of these players, and picking and choosing what tournaments you enter, I think, is a good decision. I mean, you can't deny he's in great form. He's just won his 11th French Open title, and I don't think he needs much preparation. I mean, he knows what it's like to play on grass. He's won Wimbledon before, and I think that he's probably going to be Federer's biggest threat.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a fair enough assessment. Obviously, Nadal with two previous Wimbledon titles, but not winning for 8 years. Last title coming in 2010 when he beat Thomas Berdych in the final. Rahul, do you see Nadal as a favourite here? You know, obviously, Federer and Nadal won the last six Grand Slams between them. I think if we're putting Federer as the favourite, we'd say Nadal's the second most likely man to challenge him.
I don't think he's the second favourite, but I think he will be up there. I mean, he hasn't got past the fourth round since 2011, having won it in 2010. I think there are other competitors who suit the grass court season. I mean, like, you've got players like Cilic, who in the last 5 years has got into the last eight or better. So I think there are other competitors who definitely suit the grass court season. I mean, you can never write off Nadal at the end of the day, but I just think his dominance over clay just doesn't correlate to grass court season.
I'd be inclined to agree. I still think,
I mean,
looking at the other players, he has to go in there a second favourite, because you think of the informed players in the world at the minute, the likes of Thiem, Zverev, we're yet to see them really do that well on a grass court. I mean, I think Del Potro is the other one who could do very well. I think it's interesting that he hasn't had more success on the grass court, because I think it really suits his game.
But his best run at Wimbledon came in 2013 when he reached the semi-final, where he lost a really thrilling match against Novak Djokovic in five sets. I remember watching that. That was a really epic game. Two players playing at the top of their abilities. So he's definitely got the ability. Two players I might pick out who have had runs at Wimbledon. Well, three players, actually, who have had runs at Wimbledon before.
You going to say Thomas Berdych?
I wasn't, no. Potentially. But
he's always there or thereabouts. Always, you never hear about him all year round. Come Wimbledon, Thomas Berdych is there.
He'll be in the quarterfinals, I reckon, in and out.
Yeah.
But the three I would pick out are Milos Raonic.
Yep.
Been in the final. Sure. So, obviously...
suits his game as well. Having a big first serve is huge at Wimbledon, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, you look at the likes, the people who've had the biggest success, they're probably Pete Sampras and Rod Schroeder. Both got huge serves, both great volleys.
Andy Roddick as well. Andy made Roddick. A couple of Wimbledon finals.
Exactly. Yeah, so I think, Andy Roddick's serve was pretty unparalleled.
That was ridiculous.
But that's a different matter. So I think we're sort of saying the people with the sort of serve and volley game, the likes of Milos Raonic, and the other two players I was going to pick out were, you mentioned him already, Ollie, Juan Martín Del Potro, and the man known as Baby Federer, who I just thought of, Grigor Dimitrov, who's been to semifinals before.
2014 quarterfinal against Murray, where he completely and utterly outclassed him.
He is
straight sets.
Murray was coming back from injury, but I think that that quite simply, Dimitrov has got the game. I mean, he's basically a carbon copy of Federer.
It's his consistency, really, isn't it? I mean, we've seen Dimitrov play the way he did against Murray, like I've just touched upon, but at the same time, we've seen him really struggle and not live up to his potential on numerous occasions. So I think it's definitely going to be a question of which Grigor Dimitrov comes out.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting to see. He's had some mixed form at times. Obviously, he's a classy player in his day. He has made runs to the deep end of a Grand Slam before. Rahul, so obviously if we're looking at, out of those three, Raonic, Del Potro and Dimitrov, who would you say potentially has the best shot at making the best run in Wimbledon this year?
Based on form, I think Dimitrov probably isn't going to be, I mean, he's in the Madrid Open, he lost in the round of 32, in the Italian Open, he lost in the round of 32, French Open, he lost in the round of 32. I know these are clay court seasons, but form is such an important thing. I mean, I know they're both different surfaces as such, but that mental confidence, that resilience, you need that form going into especially a big tournament like Wimbledon. But I mean, I'm gonna throw Cilic in there. I think Cilic has got a chance. I mean, he's been consistent in the last five major tournaments. As I said, he's made the last eight or better. I mean, he was in the final last year. I think he's a name that not many people have been mentioning, but he definitely could become a two-time Grand Slam champion.
Yeah, interesting, of course, as Rahul referencing there, Cilic winning the US Open before. So I suppose that does give him an edge, right? That sort of mindset. He's already won a Grand Slam, whereas the likes of Raonic and Dimitrov and who haven't. Del Potro, of course, winning the US Open in 2009, which nearly 10 years ago now, which makes me feel a bit old. I remember watching that match. So I think that really perhaps gives the likes of Cilic and Del Potro a bit of an edge over the other players, even if it's not the same Grand Slam altogether. But of course, we can't talk about Wimbledon without talking about the Brits. Andy Murray's been struggling with injury. He still wants to play at Wimbledon, but hasn't actually played a tournament yet this year. So Ollie, do you think it's unlikely that we'll be seeing him at SW19?
I personally think it is quite unlikely, I think. You can tell how desperately he wants to be back for it. I mean, Wimbledon is Andy Murray's tournament. He's won it twice before. He obviously won the Olympics on the same surface. It's just a tournament that he thrives at, and the crowd reception that he gets is absolutely unparalleled there. But I cannot see it happening. I mean, he's played so little tennis recently, and the fact that he's still struggling to enter tournaments just weeks before it starts suggests to me that he's probably not going to make it. And even if he does make it, I can't see him going all the way. I cannot see that injury or his persistent injury problems holding out for 2 weeks. I think it's his back mainly, isn't it?
Yeah, he's had surgery on his back, I believe, and also he's had problems with his knee as well.
And, I mean, having back injuries in tennis, it's the last thing you want out of all the injuries you can really have. I mean, having to arch your back for serves in the way that you do, it's got to be 100% for you to challenge, I think. And I just don't think it's going to be. Unfortunately, however much we'd love to, I think there's another Brit that we're going to have to get our hopes up for, and it's not Andy Murray.
Well, that other Brit you talk about is Kyle Edmund.
Oh, I was just going to say James Ward.
James Ward has won matches at Wimbledon before. He's a good Glasgow player. But he's obviously a bit limited.
I should have gone with Dan Evans. I think that would have been a better joke.
Dan Evans is a rogue shot, but he's the sort of player who on his day could definitely cause an upset or two. He's had a run in the US Open before, so he's got the game, I think. Actually playing at the Nottingham Open at the moment, which I think I might be seeing him play today, actually. But I'll
that'd be quite nice. Yeah, it's quite a fun player to watch. He can't backhand to save his life. I think I saw a stat where in matches, 90% of his backhand shots are slices.
Yeah, he's got a good slice, to be fair, but it's just so predictable. I completely agree with you there, Ollie. So Kyle Edmund, the main man, the hope of British tennis. Actually not a great form at Wimbledon before. I think he might have been one match there previously. So, you know, is he something, should we be getting our hopes up, do you think, guys?
I think so. I mean, I think it's only really been in the last year, 18 months, that Kyle Edmund's really come onto the map. I mean, I think the first time I really heard a lot about him was the Davis Cup, where I think he got a couple of crucial victories. I can't remember who they were against, but yeah, I think he's only really come onto the map in the last couple of years. He was obviously a youngster then, and he's still young now, but got a lot more tournament experience, and we've seen him go quite far in major tournaments already. One thing which we touched upon in the last podcast, though, was the mental side of things, which Rahul's mentioned a lot as well, and whether or not he's really got that mental edge, and that's going to be an interesting one, I think. Having the crowd on his side, which he's definitely going to, I think the crowd can definitely get behind Kyle Edmund. He seems like he's got a decent personality, not a really over exuberant one, but enough for the crowd to really get behind him. So it's going to be an interesting one. A lot's going to be dependent on the draw, which we obviously haven't seen yet. How early on is he going to meet some of these other big names? Is he going to be in the same side of the draw as Federer? Fingers crossed he won't be. But if he's not, then potentially we could see him get quite far. I'm not sure whether he'd reach the final, but I think getting to the quarterfinals is going to be a strong bet for him at least.
Yeah, I agree. I think quarterfinals is definitely the stage where he should definitely be aiming for it to achieve at least. But especially if Murray doesn't enter. I do think Murray will play. I just think like Wimbledon is his Grand Slam. I mean, in a way, I hope he doesn't play because based on his form and based on his lack of match practice, I doubt he's going to go very far, and that would be a real disappointment for British fans. But if he chooses not to play, Edmunds would be number one for the British hopes, and whether he can take that pressure or not is. We haven't really seen whether he's got that side to him. I mean, the British public would definitely be voting for him. I mean, in the matches, you can see with Murray, they are completely rooting for him 100%.
But if Murray doesn't play, what I'd love to see happen, I mean, it probably won't, but as far as I understand, they are quite good friends, having played together at Davis Cup, is for Murray to mentor Edmund, help him deal with the enormity of the occasion. If he's playing on centre court, which inevitably he will do, they're going to put those Edmund games on centre court.
Yeah, or at least court one.
Or at least court one, yeah. He is the main British threat, really, you would say. I would love Murray to be there in his camp saying, look, don't let it get to you. This is how you deal with it. This is what I would do in this situation. What's your game plan going into this? And I think that could really, really help him because we've seen in the past sort of having a mentor like that, having someone who can deal with the pressure. I mean, I know Djokovic is no longer with Becker, but I think he came into some of his best form when he appointed him as coach because Becker obviously knew how to win Wimbledon titles. I mean, that was his most successful major tournament, I think. I think, is he the youngest Wimbledon winner ever, I think?
Boris Becker, I think he's 17, which is mad.
It's absolutely crazy.
Yeah, so obviously Becker's got that sort of experience, and you're absolutely right. I think that's why Ivan Lendl really helped Andy Murray, you know,
yeah.
as somebody who won really, eight Grand Slams. Ironically, never Wimbledon, but yeah, obviously a great champion that was able to improve his mindset to that extent. So if we say hopefully Kyle Edmund will have a good run, I'm sure we'll have to see. I feel like the rest of the bridge, you know, if we get some, if we get any other players in the second round, I'd be rare to be happy with that. Yeah. We'll touch on Johanna Konta later as we come on to the women's draw. But I think that summarises our sort of thoughts on the men's side of the draw. So we go on to the women's draw. You know, we have to talk about Serena Williams. Ollie's not a huge fan, but I think it's fair to say she's probably the best female grass court tennis player ever, given the amount of time she's won Wimbledon. And given her resurgence at the French Open, provided she's fit, she's got to be one of the favourites for Wimbledon, you have to say.
Yeah, definitely. I think she's the favourite, in my opinion. And I'm not a hater of Serena Williams, as you're making out. I'm an admirer of her. I just don't think she does much for the women's game anymore. I think I said that in the last podcast. I think it's very boring seeing her win tournaments over and over again, and yeah, I cannot see past her winning it, to be honest with you. She's got a couple more weeks to continue to get back into form. We obviously saw her make that resurgence at the French Open before she unfortunately had to retire. I think I'm right in saying she is going to be fully fit for it. I think she's come out and said that herself. So yeah, I mean, you've obviously got the likes of Halep coming fresh off that victory and going back to the mental side of things again. She's obviously won that major Grand Slam now, so yeah, she's going to be up there. She's going to be ready for it. The pressure might not get to her as much, but if Serena Williams isn't at least in the final, I'd be very, very surprised.
Yeah, I think I would agree that I think she's going to have at least a very good run at Wimbledon. Rahul, what are your thoughts on Serena Williams at Wimbledon?
It's interesting. I was just looking at the bookies' odds for who they thought was most likely to win, and interestingly enough, Serena Williams isn't number one. She's number two, which is
Halep number one?
Muguruza?
No, it's Petra.
Petra Kvitova. Yeah, a good shout. Two-time Wimbledon champion.
Yeah, which is quite surprising, I guess. Seeing, I didn't expect to. I thought. I mean, I know they're pretty close in terms of their odds, but yeah, I mean, I completely agree with this. You can never write off Serena Williams, especially with her dominance over the last few years. I know she had to pull out in the French Open against Maria Sharapova, but if she is fully match fit, then there's nothing really stopping her as such. It's like Nadal and clay court. You're never going to completely override
her. It's interesting, isn't it, that Kvitova has got the best odds, because I think I'm right in saying she hasn't had the best year results wise. She certainly hasn't been in as good a form as some of the other female tennis players out there, and I think that seemingly suggests that having form on other surfaces going into Wimbledon really doesn't count for much. It's so specific, isn't it? You've got to have that certain type of game. You've got to be a big server. You've got to be able to serve a lot of aces. That's why some of the names that we've touched upon, the likes of Raonic, Andy Roddick back in the day, I mean, Marin Cilic, we see them having success. So,
well, on that note, Ollie, something I was going to touch upon later. Do you guys think that Wimbledon is one of the reasons it's the most prestigious Grand Slam to win is because of the fact that it's a different surface and you need a very specific game to win? And how difficult do you guys think it is to adjust from the hard and clay courts to the grass courts for about a month?
I think it's definitely hard. I think adjusting from clay to grass is very, very hard. I think hard court and grass court are slightly more similar. I think for the most part, good hard court players tend to be okay on grass as well, whereas the best clay court players seemingly struggle. I mean, I know we've seen Nadal win Wimbledon a couple of times, but if you think about the fact he's won 11 French Open titles, 7 or 8 of which were in a row, I think, and he's only translated that form into winning Wimbledon runs twice, I think it suggests just how hard it is to adapt and however good a form you're in. If you don't have the game, you're not going to do well.
Yeah, and
I also think, sorry, just another thing is, we see the odd ups. There's normally one or two upsets in Wimbledon in the men's drum every year. I think ones that are sticking out is when Brown beat Nadal a couple of years ago. I think when Kyrgios knocked out Nadal.
So Gostakovsky beating Federer. But
not many of them carry on these upsets into sort of semi-final appearances, maybe even final appearances.
That's a good point.
A lot of the time they tend to have that one sort of amazing game where everything goes right for them, and then the next game they'll get found out by a big server or something like that. For the most part, we tend to see the top seeds get into the final every single year, and I think, yeah, I can't see this year being any different.
But going back to how you were saying, it's difficult to adjust from the clay court season to the grass court season, how that plays a role. I mean, Nadal's played in the Monte Carlo, Barcelona, Rome, and he's played in the French Open. Those are four big, massive clay courts tournaments, which has been consecutively done. Do you think that would be a major factor in Nadal's performance in Wimbledon? Because if he's been playing so heavily, he's so focused, and it's almost become second nature to him now because it's just instinct. I know he's a world-class player, so it would be instinct anyway, but do you think that would have a major impact?
I think so, because I think that's probably part of the reason why he's not playing that many tournaments now in the build-up to Wimbledon, because he has had that heavy workload, I think. Yeah, so I think the fact that Nadal has had such a heavy workload prior to the French Open shows that he prioritised that tournament. He wanted to get the 11th, his 11th French Open. I think he saw that as the Grand Slam which he was most likely to win. And I think, Rahul, you touched on the fact that he hasn't got past the fourth round at Wimbledon for a while.
Since 2011, yeah.
He's won it twice already. Maybe that's him conceding defeat a bit, I think. He's probably going to go into the tournament without that much pressure. Federer is the clear favourite. If he gets far in the competition, great. And maybe if he plays a fantastic game in the semi-final or final, he can go all the way. But I definitely don't think he's going to lose any sleep over it. If he does have an early exit, people aren't going to think much of it. He's had quite a few of them in the past. He's just won his 11th French Open title. He's only three away from Federer. So I think Nadal's in quite a good position in the sense that, yeah, he doesn't have to play that much in the build-up. There's not that much pressure leading into the tournament, and yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see how he does get on.
I mean, I think when we're discussing whether the top four, as in the older generation versus the younger generation, there's been stats where in last year's Wimbledon, there was over 30 year olds in the fourth round, and the average age for the last 16 were 28 years old.
Wow.
So there is.
That's crazy. You really are stats man.
There is a correlation.
I don't know any of these.
There is a correlation between older players and getting further in the competition. So, I mean, bringing that back to who's more likely to win in terms of whether the young generation would trump the old generation, the stats do show that the older generation are more inclined to producing their best tennis when it actually really matters. So
that's an interesting thing to look at, definitely. And I think we just moved back to last year's final, which was between one in straight sets by Garbin Muguruza. I think I've just murdered her pronunciation, so apologies. It was
a good effort.
I don't do Spanish. So she won last year, being Venus Williams in the final in straight sets. You know, she's been to the semis in the French Open, picking up some form. You know, would you be looking at these two as definitely two people who can contend for the title again? But anyway, so we look at British hopes in this year. Johanna Konta, I think the main one. How do we rate her chances, guys?
I think they're certainly better than they were at the French Open. I think the grass court surface, I wouldn't say it's her best. I think she's obviously best on hard court, but I certainly don't think she's bad on it by any means. And in the same sense as Kyle Edmund, she's going to have a lot of crowd support. I think Johanna Konta's mental game is fairly decent. I mean, we have seen her get angry at the press, who she said that they put too much pressure on her and they're too harsh on her. So it's going to be interesting to see how she can bounce back from that. But it's going to be an interesting one. It is a very unpredictable one. I don't think she's got the game to beat the big names, the likes of Serena Williams, the likes of Muguruza. Maybe even Venus Williams. I think that would be a tie which I'd be very interested to see, Venus Williams versus Joe Konta. But in my personal opinion, I quite fancy Heather Watson. One match will always stick in the memory for me, which is her game against Serena Williams a couple of years ago, where she was absolutely outstanding. Serena Williams didn't even play badly, and Heather Watson was incredible. She really, really used the crowd support to her advantage. She used it to cheer up, and she got agonisingly close to knocking Serena Williams out, who actually eventually went on to win the tournament. She had match point, but Serena Williams, being the best female tennis player of all time, managed to eventually see the match out. But I think that she has the best grass court game out of any British player. I think she's got to the third or fourth round a couple of times now. She is very, very inconsistent. But I think I've just got a feeling, you know. I haven't really got too much logic behind it, but I do think she's the best female grass court player we've got. And I wouldn't be surprised to see her get further than Konta.
Yeah, that will be interesting to see how that develops, of course. I think we then turn attention to the one story we should pick up on is that Marion Bartoli has sadly had to abort her attempted comeback to the Wimbledon Tour, 2015 Wimbledon champion. A bit of a shame for the game. So, of course, we wish her all the best. You know, it was a great achievement for her winning in 2013, coming a little bit out of nowhere, and I think that was really pleasant for everyone to watch. A nice person, very intelligent, a higher IQ than Albert Einstein, apparently, which surprised me. But it's anyway,
crazy, that.
There you have it. But for me, I think two people I would look at personally are Venus Williams and Garbine Muguruza. They're definitely two classy players. Venus Williams, obviously lots of experience of winning Wimbledon. It's her favourite Grand Slam, so she can never be ruled out, even if she's moving on a bit in age. Whereas the young Spanish player has definitely got the quality to triumph on the grass court. She showed that last year. She's had good runs before, and she's one of the best players in the world. So I expect those two to do very well. But if we move on to some questions about Wimbledon itself, is it the most prestigious Grand Slam, quite simply?
Without doubt. I think if you're not too much of a tennis fan, you've got fairly limited knowledge, if someone asks you to name a tennis tournament, that's the first one that springs to mind. I just think the green grass court surface is so iconic, it just really sticks in the mind, because there's not as many grass tournaments, I think I'm right in saying, compared to hard court and the clay court season. I think the grass court season is certainly the shortest out of all three of them, and for me, I don't know if it's the longest going. I'd be lying if I said
I
that.
I believe it is.
I think it is, and that obviously adds more weight to it. And it might be a biased opinion, obviously, because I'm British, but there's so many iconic things associated with Wimbledon, not least the tennis. But you obviously got strawberries and cream, as this podcast is so aptly
named.
Where
did that name from?
I think there's not going to be, I mean, I'm not sure of all things, but there can't be many people out there who don't see it as quite simply the biggest tournament out there.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. I mean, the grass is what everyone symbolises tennis with.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's specific things about Wimbledon. I mean, the naming of the events, they call it gentlemen's singles and doubles, which is very unique. The ball boys and the ball girls, which is like something you don't see in every Grand Slam. I mean, and as you mentioned, the strawberries and creams, like, It's just something which is very iconic in tennis, and it's the one tournament which has really kept with the traditions as such, with the gentlemen's singles.
It's the etiquette as well. I mean, if you're invited into the members box, you have to wear white, I think. And I mean, I famously remember Lewis Hamilton, who decided that he'd take matters into his own hands and not stick by that. And he was actually kicked out, which I thought was fantastic to see. Doesn't matter how big of a star you are, doesn't matter how famous you are, if you don't abide by their etiquette, then you're not allowed to be there. And I think that just epitomises Wimbledon. And it's great to see.
I mean, even the little things like calling the players by their marital status, like Mr., Mrs., or Miss.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just going back to the etiquette. It's just something which is you don't see in the other Grand Slams, and it's something which is what something Wimbledon's done really well is keeping with its traditions and keeping with its heritage.
But at the same time, as well, it has adapted. I think we spoke on the previous podcast about the French Open and how it hasn't really moved with the times. I mean, they haven't introduced Hawkeye yet, even though they could quite easily have done so. Wimbledon could quite easily have stayed, could have said, with their centre court, look, it's been there a while, we don't want to change anything about it. But 7 or 8 years ago now, they realised that there was the potential they could introduce a roof. That was going to greatly enhance the tournament, in the sense that I think the previous year we'd seen so many rain delays to the extent where people were unsure whether they were actually going to finish the tournament inside 2 weeks, and nobody likes that, because we've seen the odd French Open final played on like the Monday or the Tuesday, and nobody likes that. That second Sunday is Grand Slam men's final day, and it should always be like that. So I think it's great to see that not only has Wimbledon kept some of its main traditions, but it has also adapted with the times in a suitable manner.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that summarises our Wimbledon preview here on Strawberries and Cream. We'll all be interested to see what happens at the All England Club, but thank you for joining us. And this could be our last episode of the academic year, so please make sure you stay tuned for us in 2018-2019. And yeah, thank you very much for listening.
This is URN Sport.